Come to order. Will the members please register their presence by voting? Clerk, please take the quorum.
Thirty-eight present, two absent.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, Representatives Rhode and Swanson are excused from the call of the House today, which accounts for all members.
Our chaplain today is Pastor Milton Hunt of the Resurrection Lutheran Church. Would the House please rise for prayer?
Let us pray. O God of power and might, who is revealed in stormy wind and wave, in earthquake and loud thunder, we also listen for your wisdom in the still small voice. For we recall how the prophet Elijah discovered your presence in a quiet moment after the hurried journey and the loud noises. In this quiet moment at the beginning of this day's session, inspire each member of this House of Representatives with wisdom and strength. We ask your divine assistance in the name of the one who put it all together, Jesus of Galilee, the risen Christ. Amen.
Representative Guy. Hearing no objection, prayer will be spread on the journal. Would the clerk please certify as to the correctness of the Daily Journal?
As Chief Clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 113th day.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that this body approve the journal as certified by the Chief Clerk for the 113th day.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. Brings us down to introduction of guests. Are there guests for introduction of the chambers? Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'm sorry I don't have the names to share with the members today, but we have a delegation here from Representative Swanson's district, and since he is excused from the call today, I take pleasure in pointing out that in Gallery A we have a number of students and chaperones from Eagle, Alaska.
Representative Nakak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Great personal pleasure of mine again to introduce a friend. His old man kicked him out and Noam took him in. Gallery B, Rich Rusk.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have students from the village of Igigik who are visiting Juneau. They're in Gallery A, I believe, and if they would stand and we'd hold our applause until I've called off all their names. They are Elena Abalama, Josie Abalama, Stanley Davis, Scott Olson, Ivan Everett. Their sponsors are Dean Weibark, Barb Weibark, and Virginia Abalama.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to take a chance and then introduce two guests I can't even see today. They were, and I think they still are, in the well of Gallery A. They are Jim Brenn, who is the pastor at Abbott Loop, and Ted Stevenson, who is an elder at Abbott Loop.
Are there further guests for introduction? If not, are there any messages from the Governor?
Dear Mr. Speaker, I've read the following resolutions and bills and I'm transmitting the enrolled and engrossed copies to the Lieutenant Governor's office for permanent filing. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 87, annulling a regulation of the Department of Environmental Conservation relating to drinking water. Legislative Resolve Number 19. House Bill Number 704, making an appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Land and Water Management, and providing for an effective date, Chapter 37, SLA 1978. House Bill Number 877, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Labor, Industrial Safety State Inspection, and providing for an effective date, Chapter 38, SLA 1978. Senate Bill Number 464, amended, relating to regional educational attendance area school board elections and providing for an effective date, Chapter 39, SLA 1978. House Bill Number 783, amended, Senate, making a special appropriation to the Alaska State Council on the Arts and providing for an effective date, Chapter 40, SLA 1978. Free Conference Committee Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 780, making special appropriations to the Department of Health and Social Services for lump sum grants to alcoholism programs in the state and providing for an effective date, Chapter 41, SLA 1978. Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 795, making a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Community and Regional Affairs for the benefit of the Fairbanks Town and Village Association for Development Incorporated and providing for an effective date, Chapter 42, SLA 1978. Signed sincerely, J.S. Hammond, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has passed Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 642, Finance, Special Appropriation to Mortgage Insurance Fund of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and returning same. This bill has been sent to enrolling. The Senate has passed the following, and it is transmitted herewith for consideration. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 418 by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the Alaska Longevity Bonus and providing for an effective date.
Referred to the Committee on Health, Education, Social Services, and Finance.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on HESS has had House Bill 553 relating to licensing of speech pathologists and audiologists under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 553 and that it do pass. No, reports are back without recommendation. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, Buchholz, O.C., Chatterton, Bennett, and Parr, signing do pass, NACAC, Byrne, and Phillips. House Bill 553 has no further referral. The Special Committee on Subsistence has had House Bill 674, regionalizing the Board of Fisheries and the Board of Game, under consideration, and a majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 674 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Anderson, Jr., Chairman, signing do pass, Anderson, Guy, NACAC, and Akers, signing do pass if amended, Cooper, signing no recommendation, Hayes, signing do not pass, Cotton. House Bill 674 has a further referral to resources. The Committee on HESS has had House Bill 842 relating to the functions and organization of the State Publications Library Distribution Center under consideration.
Representative Schaefer.
Can we have a brief of these, please?
House, please stand at ease. On the order. Mr. Clerk, further standing committee reports.
The Committee on HESS has had House Bill 842 relating to the functions and organization of the State Publications Library Distribution Center under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 842 and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Parr, Chairman, concurred in by NACAC, Cotton, Buchholz, O.C., Chatterton, Bennett, Parr, Byrne, and Phillips. House Bill 842 has a further referral to finance. The Special Committee on Subsistence has had House Bill 960 relating to fish and game management under consideration. A majority of the committee reports it back with an attached amendment and with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Anderson, Chairman, signing do pass, NACAC, Guy, Akers, and Anderson, signing do pass if amended, Cotton, Cooper, Mr. Schaefer signed do pass. Mr. Hayes has no recommendation. House Bill 960 has a further referral to resources. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation congratulating Dale Park by Representative Buchholz. Citation congratulating Lisa M. Parker by Representative Rudd. Citation in memoriam Clarence Mattson by Representatives Duncan and Miller. House Concurrent Resolution 128 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, requesting a comprehensive plan to minimize otitis media.
Refer to the Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of House bills.
House Bill 961 by the Rules Committee, an act making a special appropriation to the University of Alaska, Anchorage Community College, for an educational child care program and providing for an effective date.
Refer to the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, may I be at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like this time to bring up the reconsideration of Senate Bill 181.
Places a bill before us in third reading. Will the clerk please read Senate Bill 181, third reading?
Senate Bill number 181, amended by the House, by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act creating the Orca Inlet and Controller Bay critical habitat area.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, there has been a request by several members that apparently some groups want to take a brief look at this. And so for purposes of just allowing a little examination time and decidedly not for purposes of burying the bill, I'm going to move at this time that Senate Bill 181 be returned to Rules.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Representative Miles.
Mr. Speaker, there will be a Democratic caucus on the recess motion by the Majority Leader.
Representative Urien.
There will be a Republican caucus upon recess.
Representative Miller.
There are no further announcements before recess, Mr. Speaker. I'll ask unanimous consent this body stand in recess to the call of the chair.
Hearing no objection, House is in recess. Down to consideration of the daily calendar. The clerk, please read the first item on the calendar.
House Concurrent Resolution number 112 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, approving the sale of royalty oil to Alaska Petrochemical Company. The Special Committee on the Sale of Royalty Oil and Gas has had House Concurrent Resolution 112 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do not pass. Report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Chatterton, McKinnon, and Parr. Signing due pass, Osterbeck. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Question before the House is, shall House Concurrent Resolution 112 pass the House? The discussion? Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Brief explanation of why the House Royalty Oil Gas Committee gave it 4 out of 5 do not pass votes, I think, is in order. And we'll just briefly outline what the what's been said in the committee reports. There were six major items that the committee noted, and I'll take them one by one, just very briefly summing up what our conclusions were and how we got there. First, the first conclusion, the first item was the benefits to the people of Alaska. Obviously, we all know that a number of jobs, certain amount of revenue, tax benefits have been promoted on behalf of Alpetco. Our conclusions, our findings indicated that these will all be overshadowed by the costs incurred due to the increase of people, the increase in cost of schools, roads that are associated with the facility. The witnesses in the reports that were made available to the committee, including a report from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, said that this in-state refining or petrochemical facility is going to cost the state in the long run $1.5 to $2.5 billion. That's from the executive branch. Mr. Patton, the head of Alaska Pipeline, says that each job is going to cost us $240,000 per year. The Institute of Social and Economic Research, who did the only net benefit study that was done, there was none done when the contract was presented to the legislature. Certainly indicates that the project will create a number of jobs after construction in the area of indirect and direct jobs, 7,000 to 9,000, and the state coffers will be increased by roughly $50 million. That report goes on to point out, however, that the revenue less expenditures with the associated cost of the project will show a negative factor every year from the year 1981 to the year 2000, from a shortfall to the state treasury of $27 million to a high of $221 million. These figures were rather astounding to me when I first saw them, so we had the legislative research go back and recheck the models, recheck the assumptions that went into it, and they found that the assumptions were essentially correct. The second point that we included in the report was the economic feasibility of the project, of the entire idea. Well, Petco obviously says, yes, it can go through the value-added concept. Again, the Department of Community Regional Affairs and the Department of Commerce in reports from their economists last December, said, no, it just won't go. That it will be impossible to overcome the geographical costs, and the other aspects that go into the so-called Alaska disadvantage. There will be an ultimate price reduction requested, and I believe this is true. There will be an ultimate price reduction requested a year or two, 5 years down the pike, and this is the only solution to keep the firm on its feet and keep those people in the jobs. The experts from Patton to Tussing, Dave Rayum from Department of Commerce, all say it just won't go. The economics aren't there, and if it does, it certainly won't pay its own way. The third aspect that we singled out as being worthy of certain important considerations in the report was the marketing aspects. The proposal calls for marketing in Japan, the Pacific Rim, and on the West Coast. The committee found that while there was some hope for and some substantial hope for petrochemical marketing on the West Coast due to the shortage of marketing capacity or refining capacity on the West Coast, that there may be a problem with the Mexican production, which is coming online. The Pemex is expected to expend $15 billion over the next 6 years in petroleum and petrochemical development. The obvious market, according to Data Resources, another report that we had, will be the West Coast of California. The Japanese question was bandied about for quite some time, both publicly and privately. It seems that of all the letters that were floated around, there was really no strong indication, with the exception of one letter from the president of the petroleum industry, the organization of petrochemical associations in Japan, which just said it's impossible. There's going to be a glut of petrochemicals in Japan for the next 10 years, and that they just can't afford to participate in the project. The fourth point that was raised in the report was the question of pre-delivery of oil. The contract calls for delivery of the royalty crude upon financial commitments for the project. The reasons given for this commitment were essentially twofold: that it will make financing much easier, and it will also greatly aid one of the principles in the project, shipping principle. Very simply, the committee could find no good reason to commit this commit the oil early. And it seems like we're just adding to the number of risks that would be involved. Speaking to the fifth point on risks, we've heard all along from the associate, from the Alpetco consortium that there is no risk to this contract. That's absurd, Mr. Speaker. There's risk in any number of areas, regardless of what the public relations folks say. There's any number of risks. I'll just point out a few. Future resource development. The contract calls for taking up to 70% of non-Prudhoe Bay royalty oil. Commissioner Laresh testified that this clause would kick into effect on day one because there probably wouldn't be enough North Slope royalty to reach the 145,000-150,000 barrels a day. So with this commitment of up to 70% of the non-Prudhoe royalty, what we've done is we've virtually wiped out any additional in-state development. It essentially gives a monopoly to Alpetco. I don't think that's a wise business decision to make. It probably wipes out any chance that Fairbanks will ever have for petrochemical development. The second risk comes in the financing end of the proposal. Alpetco, as we know, is not a corporation that's going to put up any of its own assets. If you or I go out to buy a house, Mr. Speaker, we say, okay, I'll come up with 10, 20, 25% down. Alpetco plans to finance this through debt to 100%. There's no pledge of any assets. If it fails, the state has nothing. The state has just lost its oil. If it goes down, in essence, they've not only had the benefit of our oil, they've had the benefit of having us. The third risk that we noticed was the completion of the crude processing facility. Mr. Lipton, who's been a consultant to this legislature for many, many years, has indicated very strongly that the state's in no position or will not be in a position really to force the benchmarks. There are a number of benchmarks in the contract which say X has to be done by time certain. And therefore what we see is that strong possibility of just a continued taking of oil and possibly a gas petrochemical complex, gas liquids. It has to be well understood that there's no requirement for in-state processing in the contract. There really isn't, and any number of people have made this very clear. The fourth and final major risk of the contract, as I see it, is the possibilities for litigation. Again, we're dealing with a paper corporation that's not putting up any of its own assets. It's only to its benefit and not the state's benefit to engage in litigation. The contract certainly is a very litigable one. If there's any default, we go to court. Alpetco continues to get the oil, and frankly, we get the shaft on the deal. We have nothing that we can go after if there's a problem with the contract. They have nothing. The corporation is putting up absolutely nothing. The final point, a very, very major point, I think, to the contract is the commitment of up to 70% of the unknown, undiscovered reserves of royalty crude in the state. This seems to me, we're talking about business paying its own way in the state, to be in absolute direct conflict with any basic business practice. It's perhaps the biggest gamble of the whole contract. And I think it's comparable to any other business. If you're selling cars or if Safeway and Cars food stores are selling frying pans, and what in essence the contract says, we're going to take that frying pan, we the state of Alaska, we're going to sell it now. We don't know what the color of that frying pan is. We don't know what it's going to cost. We don't know what size it is. We don't even know where the hell it is because it's undiscovered. It's unknown. But we're going to sell it anyway. And frankly, this provision, this commitment, just is beyond me as far as good, solid business practices. I think what we have here, Mr. Speaker, is a contract that's sort of like somebody presenting the state with a dozen fresh-cut roses. They look beautiful now, but in two or three years, they don't mean a damn, and they're all shriveled up in terrible, terrible shape. Thank you.
Representative Bradley.
Can we have an at ease?
House, please stand at ease. House, please come to order. Is there further discussion? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to point out to the body and the public that I have a very personal, private, direct benefit if the Alpetco contract is approved. I'm a shareholder of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation. I'm also a director, and one of our subsidiaries has an interest in Alpetco. And based on that, I would like to ask that I be permitted not to vote on this issue.
There's objection. Under the rules, unanimous consent is required for to abstain from a vote. You'll have to vote, Representative Anderson. Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to only add one thing to what Mr. Miles has said. The committee met with Mr. Lipton several times on this. As you know, he is our best, supposedly our prime consultant. And he pointed out one thing that I think may need to be brought to the attention of the members. The prognosis that he makes is that as we go into the mid-1980s, which would be not very long after this plant would be finished, that the demand, the gulf between supply and demand on the world market for oil is going to change, and that this there will be a narrowing of the gap. To some extent today there is a buyer's market, but Mr. Lipton did not really call it a seller's market, but he did say was that when we get into the mid-1980s or thereabouts, that the guaranteed supply of oil will be more important than price. Right now, there's a buyer's market to some extent. Price is the important thing. But this guaranteed supply is going to be the key issue as you move into the mid-1980s. And that people will, in other words, be willing to pay a higher price because they've got to have this guaranteed supply. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Lipton followed up that by saying to us, and he did not recommend at that time for or against the Alpetco contract, but he told us, he said, if you have a deal coming up, take a hard look at it. If you're not really positive it's a good deal, he said, don't jump at it. He said, you're better off to wait. You have nothing to lose by waiting. And that's almost a direct quote. Mr. Speaker, I think that does bear on this contract. The report from the committee does say we are not against petrochemical development in the state. It does suggest that the governor go back to the drawing boards and come back with a better contract with which the legislature would have no problem, and they would lose somewhere between 6 months and a year. The best information we have from the best consultant we supposedly have is that would be a wise thing to do.
Further discussion? Representative Byrne?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to speak in favor of this resolution. I support it, and I don't have any fears of it or any concerns. I think it's a good and proper resolution and one that we should pass. What we're saying here is that a private industry is coming into our state, and they offer with their own capital, with their own money, to make a basic industry for us. And all they want us to do is to sell them the oil so that they can, you know, develop and operate their business. I don't see any risks to the state. If they don't fulfill their contract, we don't give them the oil. It's as simple as that. There isn't a contract in the world that doesn't have some problems, and I'm sure there's problems in this contract. I see some that if the contract were written again, those points may be changed a little bit. But basically, it's a reasonable type of contract, as I see it, and I think that we should go ahead and approve it. What we have done as a legislature in the past is we've complained that the governor doesn't do certain things. And when he does do something, we say it's not what he should do, and we've all complained about him. But at the same time, here's a situation where the governor has followed the directions of the legislature. We ordered him to come up with this contract, and now we're saying that we don't like the contract. And I think that's a significant point, because it may be that we are a weak legislature. Maybe we just don't have enough hair in our chest to do things. We constantly complain about the governor, but we have an opportunity now to take the bull by the horns and do something positive, and we're stalling. We're just dilly-dallying on it. I think we make the laws, and these laws we're making are all permissive. They're all broad, general laws. They aren't orders to the governor. The governor is the executive of the state. He's to do the things the legislature orders him to do. And we're not giving him orders. We're saying, you may do this, you may do that, if you think this, if you think that. Now, in this particular case, we directed him to enter into a contract negotiations with Alpetco, or with these various companies, to see which negotiations would be the most fruitful for our people. So he's labored and he's produced a contract. And it's a reasonable contract, one I think we should support. Remember, too, that the United States Constitution wasn't perfect. We amended it many, many times. And this contract may be amended down the trail. It's true. Like any other contract, it's always open to negotiations. Negotiations never end in a business deal. And I think that anyone who thinks otherwise is silly. We're going to be negotiating this contract forever. But we negotiate every contract forever. There isn't any end to a contract. Just because it's signed doesn't mean that's the way it's going to be. Each party always comes back and wants something else additional over the life of the contract. I want to vote for it, and I hope that other members of the legislature will vote for it also. Thank you.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to refer to the preamble of the previous speaker on one point and assure him that any time an entity comes into this state to build a petrochemical plant with their own money, he'll find me right alongside of him, trying my very best to make sure there are no roadblocks put up in their way. But, Mr. Speaker, that is not the situation with this contract, and I am opposed to it.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Anderson said that he had a conflict of interest in this, and he thought that he had something personally to gain on this contract. Well, I happen to think that all of us on this floor have the possibility of something personally to gain by the approval of this contract, because I think it offers the state of Alaska something that it needs. There's one line in the committee report that bothers me terribly after reading it all and seeing the conclusions at which they arrive. The line that bothers me, it says, finally, the House Royalty Oil and Gas Committee is strongly committed to the development of an in-state petrochemical facility, period. Well, if that committee is committed, and I personally am committed, when are we going to do this, Mr. Speaker? When are we going to provide for this in-state facility? Mr. Tusing says that if we had sold our royalty oil 2 years ago, we could have obtained a premium for it. But everyone decided to take the safe position 2 years ago and not do anything. So I guess today there's a feeling that we ought to take the safe position and not do anything, and maybe wait for somewhere down the pike when instead of the premium, the price maybe keeps decreasing. You know, Mr. Speaker, there's numerous consultants who have said that this project is economically unfeasible. Well, I can understand where consultants come from. You know, Mr. Speaker, we pay them to come and appear before our committees and give us their opinion. We pay them our dollars. And it's easy for a consultant to look at it and looks around and see where which way the wind is blowing, and he says, this project won't go. It won't go. We pay him to tell us that. Well, Mr. Speaker, there's Alpetco. They have paid. They're the ones that are paying. They have put their hard dollars into this project, and they are telling us with their dollars that it is economically feasible. That should weigh heavily on our minds, Mr. Speaker. Those we pay tell us no, and those that pay tell us yes. I tend to listen to a guy who puts his bucks up front. That means something. It's not a flim-flam. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Tusing also told us that the contract we have here before us today is probably the best we'll ever get. So if we're really like the committee says, we are strongly committed to the development in-state petrochemical facility. If we are truly dedicated to that, Mr. Tusing says this is the best contract we'll ever get. So what do we have? What does the state of Alaska have to offer a petrochemical facility? What can we give them to get them to be here to achieve this commitment of ours? Well, Mr. Speaker, we have several things. We have cold weather. We have high costs, and we have great distances to the market. Doesn't sound very good. What's the good thing we have, Mr. Speaker? We have a guaranteed source, long-term source of oil. We've got the raw material. That's the good thing we have to give them. That's the only incentive we can give them to get them to come to Alaska. Mr. Speaker, I submit that's exactly what this contract does. It guarantees Alpetco the one good thing we have for them, our royalty oil. Now, if we were to base our vote today on the criteria that the good people in the university say, the more people you have in the state, the more it costs, the more our budget goes up. We all know that. The more people you have, the greater the budget is that we pass each year. If we were to base every decision or every development. Possible development on that same criteria, we would reject everything. So what we're telling our constituents if we vote no today, we're telling them we're against industrial development in the state of Alaska. I'm not willing to tell my constituents that I'm against industrial development in the state of Alaska. I don't want to tell them that I'm against them having jobs or against a facility that will pay taxes. I urge the members to prove once and for all that when we passed into law section 3806 creating the Alaska Royalty Oil and Development Advisory Board, let's show them we meant something when we passed that law about in-state use of our oil and gas, giving priority to in-state use. Or was this the flim-flam that the legislature put on its constituents? That's the flim-flam if we vote no today. I urge the members to vote yes.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Urien is right in outlining a large number of problems facing petrochemical development in Alaska. And he's also right in pointing out that we only have one good thing going for us, and that's an assured supply of oil feedstock. There's only one drawback, and it's a drawback that virtually every consultant and every economist that the committee talked to agreed upon, and that's that the cost of that oil is too high to make this project economically feasible. Now, and Mr. Burns correct on another point, and that's that there are going to be amendments proposed to this contract. And the amendment that's going to be proposed is an amendment to reduce the price that the state gets for its oil. There's no doubt in the minds of our consultants that's the only way this project is going to go. And what we're going to face is that we're suddenly going to find ourselves into the project, people at work, building the facility. You know, Petco is going to come to the administration and say, we're stuck. We've got this project underway. We find we can't get into contracts to complete the project or to guarantee that people are going to be willing to purchase the products unless we get a lower price. And I think we're all aware of the pressure that's come down on this legislature over the last few days. And I think you can all stop and imagine what the pressure is going to be like when there are 8,000 to 10,000 Alaskans at work on this project, and Alpetco comes to us and tells us that we have to reduce the price of our oil. Quite frankly, I'm not impressed with the performance of this legislature in standing up to the pressure we've been receiving over the last few days. So I can imagine the way that we'll react to the type of pressure we'd be getting in that situation. I just don't think we'd react very well at all. I've seen this legislature cave into too many special interests to believe that we'd hold up very well. I think what we're going to find ourselves in is we're in a situation where we're forced to reduce, through political pressure, the price we're getting for our oil. And it's going to be more than just that study. You know, the loss of the state is going to be more than just the ISER study showed. I mean, all right, that's the cost of development, the cost of additional governmental services. But what we're talking about is a very real possibility, and probably a reality, and the only reality we'll be facing in the situation is that the state's going to be losing hundreds of millions of dollars that it otherwise would be getting off of its royalty oil. And I just think it's a bad deal. And I think if we're going to cave into this type of pressure, I think a lot of people are doing it with an eye to the November election. I think it's just going to, it confirms for me anyway, the problems we're going to be facing 2 or 3 years from now when Alpetco comes in and asks us to reduce the price of the oil.
Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. McKinnon would have us believe that somewhere down the line Alpetco is going to come in and ask us to reduce the price of oil to make their project go after there are 8,000 or 10,000 people, 9,000 or 10,000 people employed. Well, let's look at the terms of the contract, Mr. Speaker. Article 10.2. Within 6 months after this contract, Mr. Speaker, Alpetco will actually expend at least $2 million. They will actually expend $2 million. We're going down to after 12 months, or within 12 months after the signing of the contract, they would actually expend $3 million. And then within 18 months, they will actually expend $10 million. Then come the hookers, Mr. Speaker. They will, within 18 months, have contracts to sell at least 70% of their product. They will have signed contracts for at least 70% of their product. And the big hooker, Mr. Speaker, within 18 months, they will obtain or cause contractually bound third parties to obtain written commitments to lend or invest at least $1,500,000,000 in the aggregate for the payment of the total project costs. They will borrow, beg, or steal within 18 months $1,500,000,000. Mr. Speaker, I submit that there's not a banker in this world that's going to lend his bucks on anything that is anything but a viable project. And if they can't obtain these commitments within 18 months, there won't be 9,000 or 10,000 people employed. There'll be no project. The contract will be null and void, and it'll be all over with. We've given it our best shot, and it's done. No subsidy.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to. I was going to make one speech, and that was it. But the minority leader brought up the term of flim-flam. Well, he's not kidding. He's just damn right on when he calls this a flim-flam. Last fall, the State Energy Policy Committee reviewed the four remaining proposals, and one of their 11 recommendations to the governor was that we commit to a contract, and that we do support, we did then, we do now, I'm convinced, petrochemical development in the state. There's no question about that. But that we do with a specified amount of Prudhoe. Now the flim-flam comes in when we start selling something we don't have. It's a magic show. We don't know where it is. We don't have it. We don't know what it's worth. We don't know what it's going to cost. We don't know what it's going to look like. There's where the flim-flam lies. I think that's something that the minority leader really has to realize. He suggested that maybe delay of this contract is because we are going to have a possible price decrease. A price decrease with oil and gas worldwide, situation in oil and gas worldwide, it's a finite resource. We all know it's a finite resource. We know the price is going up. A price decrease, that's equally absurd. The final point that the good minority leader made was this buck up front, I think, was earlier, not a box of front situation, possibly a million, 2 million, 10 million. But that's, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars for 27 years. 70% of all our royalty oil, up to 70% of all our royalty oil, all royalty oil. And there's no box up front. That's where the commitment is, and that's where the swing is.
Representative Osterbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know. We listen to all these stories. I've been listening to them for 4 years, and I don't think nobody really knows what's going on. But I think if we're looking at to develop our state, I think we have to take a chance on trying to get some of our oil in the state where we can sell it to our users. Right now you're talking about they'll have to drop the price on oil. Do anybody in this body knows how much it costs to ship oil back east? They drop our wellhead price about $3 a barrel. If we took it down the pipeline, we would save the cost of shipping it back east. Right now they're selling our oil on the west coast at $8 a barrel. They got so much they don't know what to do with it. It costs too much to ship through the Panama Canal. We're trying to negotiate with Japan where we think we could save some of the wellhead price. And you talk about schools, how much it's going to cost. We're talking about adding bottom fish. If we're going to develop our fishery, we're going to have to put out bucks. What we're looking at is something like a $5 billion return. Looking at some of the other things, what they're proposing right now is a gas line. We know we're going to lose money on that. It's going to cost us about $3 for so many cubic feet of gas. And they're selling it down on the eastern 48s right now for about $2.80. So we're going, or $2.75. We're going to lose about 25 cents on every 1,000 cubic feet or whatever it is. But we're willing to go along with that and put $1.5 billion in it, where we know it's a losing proposition. This one, I think, we might stand a chance to make some money to get some cheaper fuel for the cars in Anchorage, Fairbanks, for the fishing boats. They could also go into making nylon web and rope, what we're importing from Japan. We ship the oil over to them, and then we buy the stuff back. When you buy stuff from a foreign country on fishing equipment, you're paying 45% duty on it. You can bring in a suit of clothes or anything else for 6 cents duty, 6%. Fishing gear is 45%. Some people say it's cheaper to buy it from over there than to make it here. But when you look at what the fishermen have to pay, they pay the bill. They pay that 45% duty. And if we can do that in our state, looking at the whole picture, saying we're going to go into bottom fish, well, we need gear. If we could make that out of this petrochemical plant, I think the state would make money. And if you don't think there's enough markets in this state, Seattle, Oregon, California is still buying their equipment from Japan, Norway, and Denmark. And there's no reason why we couldn't make it and start selling it. Sure, I know it's a gamble, but everybody knows that when they go and play cards, play poker or something. Once in a while they lose and sometimes they win, and I think this is something we got to look at. We're standing talking about moving capital to Willow. If anybody can show me where the state is going to make money on that, we're not blinking an eye. We say we're going to move the capital, and it's going to cost us $4.5 billion plus the interest. Everybody say, well, that's fine, that's what we should do. But I think we should look at something where the state could get some revenue back off it. And I don't believe we should ship everything out to the lower 48 and then buy it back. Our fuel is going to be about $1 a gallon for our fishing boats here in the next couple of years. You're paying the freight down to California, then you're paying it back up again on a tanker. It goes up to Dutch Harbor. They pump more fuel in Dutch Harbor than any other station on the West Coast. They even fuel Cordova from Dutch Harbor, run it up to there from California and haul it back down to Cordova. Somebody paid them costs, and it's the people that's buying it. There are 6 native corporations going in on this. They're willing to put their dollars up. They're not going to get in there because there's no free lunch. And they're willing to put their money in, so they must look at a profit somewhere. So I don't think they'd want to give it back or give it all away if they couldn't make any money on it. And I think we should vote for this contract. Maybe it's not the right thing we want, but I don't think it's going to start, and we amend all the other laws. And I think we could amend some of the bad parts in this and get a good resolution out of it. I'd urge the body to vote yes.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote for the contract. I think that it's important to vote on that which is clearly at hand and not that which lies dimly in the future. And I don't think it's unwise to change your mind on an issue that's before this body. I started from the premise of no on the contract, and I had questions I wanted to have answered about it. And over the past 4 days, I've had, to my satisfaction, those questions answered. I don't view it as caving in. I view it as going from ground zero in your knowledge about an issue to some knowledge about it, at least. We all understand how this process works. We have 1,000 issues before us, some of greater moment than others. And we serve on committees, and we study most those bills that are before our committees. We have to rely heavily on the recommendations of a committee report. In this instance, the committee report was made, and it was largely negative, largely against this contract. So I start from that premise that, no, I'm not going to vote for the contract. I asked that there be a caucus among the House GOP members so that we could learn more about it to see if I was going the wrong direction. I'd had some counsel from a friend of mine who I have a lot of respect for, who urged me to vote against this contract. And I think he's a very wise man. And so I asked questions and I began to learn. And I don't view that learning process as caving in. And I think that I'm a man of principle, and my first principle is flexibility. I think that, in fact, should be something we're all capable of performing. Robert Fulton, well, before I sum up with Robert Fulton, let me say again, I think you have to vote on what you see clearly at hand. And I see clearly at hand an opportunity for petrochemical development in Alaska, so that rather than taking our oil in value, we can take it in kind and we can build up our base industry. I see that clearly at hand. I see a lot of problems down the road, but I see them dimly. I really wouldn't want to make a book on them one way or the other. So I have to take the, because I am for development, because I am for petrochemical development in Alaska, I have to go this way. Robert Fulton was the guy with the steamboat, of course. And he had a lot of skeptics, too. There was this guy who, as the story goes, was standing on the bank, jumping up and down, saying, Fulton can't get it started. He can't get it started. And of course, Fulton started the old steamboat, and it went along. And the guy immediately then started to chant, Fulton can't stop it. Fulton can't stop it. Well, I would guess that in its wisdom, this legislature probably, through this contract, can get a petrochemical industry started. And if it, down the road, where we all look dimly right now, there is cause to abort this attempt, I believe that the contract that has been formed has sufficient safeguard to allow us, in our wisdom, to abort, if that should ever be necessary.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, through the chair, I'd like to ask Representative Parr from Fairbanks on an interpretation, or maybe an expanded interpretation, when he asked Mr. Lipton about the gambles of the risks of the contract. On page 28 of the testimony of the March 15th meeting, Mr. Parr asked, if the gamble seems like a good gamble, we go. If it's a poor gamble, and then Mr. Lipton interrupts and, when Mr. Parr asked him about the gamble of this contract. And Mr. Lipton explained, I think the biggest risk in that contract will collapse as we personally assess the probability of success and not as not all that great, and that this is the risk. I would like to ask Mr. Parr if he has an interpretation or maybe expanded for me. I do value Mr. Lipton's testimony very greatly, and I'd like to get an expanded interpretation as Mr. Parr sees it.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, when I referred earlier to Mr. Lipton's testimony, I was not referring to the time that Mr. Phillips is asking about. This was an earlier meeting, and we really hadn't even gotten into the Alpetco contract. We were simply talking in general terms about what was going to happen with the oil and which, so what we should be looking at. And all I can say is that my understanding of what Mr. Lipton said at that last meeting that Representative Phillips is asking about is that, you know, he considered a very, he figures it's likely the thing's going to go down a drain. That's my understanding of what he's saying. I might point out, Mr. Speaker, while I'm on the floor, that you have a lot of consultants, and you have to, I guess, choose which ones you're going to listen to. And then, of course, sometimes some people have been known to choose certain things that certain consultants said, and not, you know, that's what you'd like to quote. And I noticed that the minority leader a while ago was quoting Mr. Toosing, who is a pretty good economist, I guess. And he, like I guess a lot of us, cited what seemed to him to be of worth citing. I cite something else that Mr. Toosing told us, however, and that is this. He talk what that, what's going to happen to that oil before the plant gets operating. And what's Sal Petco going to do with it for this period of time until they start processing it? Well, they're going to sell it. Obviously, they can't eat it. You know, they're going to have to sell it. They're getting it at a reasonably low price. And they don't want to make any money on it particularly, but they're going to sell it at that low price. And where are they going to sell it? On the West Coast. There's no other place to sell it, really, if you look at the economics. And what happens when they sell low-priced oil on the West Coast? It drives down the price of the other 7/8 that the producers are selling, which they're mostly selling on the West Coast, too. And what happens when you drive down the price of this 7/8 of the oil on the West Coast? That comes right back to a lowered wellhead value. Who suffers by that? The state of Alaska. Now, I'm not saying that Mr. Toosing is 100% right. He's projecting the future like the rest of us. But I think if a minority leader is going to cite Mr. Toosing in all these other respects, he ought to cite Mr. Toosing on that point, too. We might lose as much through a lowered wellhead value for the 7/8 as we would possibly make any other way. So there's a loss there, which is certainly a potential loss, and which has to be considered.
Representative Rudd.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Carpenter spoke about the weighing, the balancing the values of what we have clearly at hand as opposed to what lies dimly in the future, and I think we've all been doing that in the case of this contract. In my view, the contract is probably as good a contract as could be negotiated at this time. I don't see any overriding faults with it that don't rise out of what we see dimly in the future. That's the problem, Mr. Speaker, as to what we see dimly in the future. Now, my crystal ball is just as clouded as everybody else's. I don't have any supreme confidence that I know what's going to happen in the future. But I have to base my judgment on the people that I've talked to and the reading that I've done concerning the possibilities of making this project really a viable project in the future. And everyone, in fact, not one single person that I've talked to or any of the reading that I've done have encouraged me in the belief that actually a petrochemical complex on a world scale is going to be a viable project in Alaska. So while we may have something that looks good clearly at hand, the future to me does not, it does seem dim because, as I said, I don't have any supreme confidence in my ability to see any more clearly than others, but from all the information that's available to me, it's not going to work in the long run. And I think Mr. McKinnon is quite right when he points out the pressures that will come to the legislature in the future to make it possible for this project to work, i.e. to lower the price of the oil and to lessen the revenues to the state of Alaska. I'm not at all sure that if I were here I could withstand that kind of pressure. It would be very difficult to say to people who have put millions and millions of dollars into a project, to people who are looking towards getting a good, stable employment climate in the state, at that point to say, no, we're not going to give in on the price. At that point, I think I wouldn't be able to say it. The only time I could say it is now, looking to the future with my crystal ball and saying that it doesn't look to me, from all the evidence that's available, as though it's going to work in the long run. And because of that, I have to vote against it now, because I don't want to get into the situation later when the state is going to be in an untenable position, in a position where we cannot resist the pressure that's going to be brought on us to make the project go. So I guess in the long run, I have to agree with Mr. Byrne. I don't have enough hair on my chest to vote yes on this.
Representative Dankworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, in my comments, I'd like to, I think probably not enough recognition has been given to the men who served on this committee on gas and royalty oil. I know all of them, and they're very honorable men, and I thought they did an excellent job of working some awfully long hours. And both Representative Miles and Chatterton and Parr and McKinnon, Mr. Osterbeck, and I hope I didn't leave anybody out there. I know they worked awfully hard on it. And while I may not agree with the conclusions that they've reached. It's mainly because I believe that they're working on the wrong presumption to begin with and the wrong premise. And it addresses a little bit what Mrs. Rudd just said and what Representative McKinnon spoke to, of what we might have to subsidize someone in future years. That to me is all right. I see nothing wrong with that. I think that's a fear that we shouldn't have. Our natural resources in this state, Mr. Speaker, can be translated three ways. They can be translated into dollars, they can be translated into jobs, or they can be translated into money and jobs. Now, the premise that everybody's working on in this state, since in my judgment it's turning a little bit feudalistic in the sense that the state owns everything or is going to control everything, is that all we're concerned about is getting the top dollar for our resource. The top dollar, or the dollar that we get, it can be translated into nothing but more government, bigger bureaucracy, more services. The guy out there on the street that we say, when we say the state owns this oil, he doesn't get any of this. The state does, and when we use the word state, we're talking about a government, a bureaucracy. It'll get $200 more million. This is what I think we're making a mistake in doing. Let's translate some of that resource as we have not in the past. All of our gold has gone out. Our fish have been processed outside. Our timber is going to Japan. Our oil is going outside. I think it's time, Mr. Speaker, that we stopped and we saw that some of this value might be in jobs. We just voted in the permanent fund, which I objected to at the time, for reasons not because we wanted to diversify the economy, but our argument was that we need to diversify the economy. We need to get something up here to keep everything from going outside. Well, I believe that we ought to evaluate for more than just the dollar, what the bureaucracy needs for more money. We have to view it in light of jobs. Even if we have to trade for less for our resource, if it means jobs, we get some money in jobs, and does that balance out to be a higher price? I think it does. I'd take less money right now for some of our timber in this state if it would be processed instead of in Japan. But we want to get top dollar so we can build bigger bureaucracies and no jobs. I'd take less money for a number of things if we could process it in the state and translate that resource into jobs, which is people. And the guy out there on the street that needs a job, if we keep him unemployed and we get the money, about all we can do, as I see it, is pay him welfare and unemployment. Or we can translate that into jobs. So to speak to that, Mr. McKinnon says, let's say that we get 10,000 men working in this state, and we have to lower a few dollars our price of our resource to keep those 10,000 men working. That's not all bad. Or should we put them out of work so that the state can get more money and we'll have a bigger bureaucracy? That's my point. And for that reason, I support this contract with no fear that eventually we might have to get less dollars but more jobs. That's what this country is all about. That's the diversification, and the free enterprise system has got to work. So while I commend these men for a job well done, and I think it's just that I don't agree with the premise that the only thing in this world for this government to look at is a dollar bill. We've got to look at the people, too, and the people need jobs. Thank you.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The representative from Anchorage that just spoke, why I certainly appreciate what he said. I think that in many respects why subsidization of jobs within this state is important. However, the only place where I stray from that position is the way that it is done. I'm a very cost-effective type of an individual. Now, we have all heard, I don't think it's any news to anyone here, that a petrochemical complex is a very capital-intensive type of an operation. And if we're going to subsidize that by lowering the price of our crude oil, or the feedstock to that plant, in order to subsidize jobs. Mr. Speaker, I submit to you that that's very cost ineffective. Construction is a very labor-intensive type of an operation. If we, the state, choose to subsidize jobs, it'll be much more cost-effective for us to take our royalty oil in value and take the dollars and develop public works. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I think the terms subsidy and incentive and now diversification have been used rather loosely here. The term diversification, to have any meaning, would mean that eventually the project that you were subsidizing or giving an incentive to would be able to support itself in the long run. Because if you're talking about taking a resource and selling it for less than value over a period of time, you're not diversifying. What you're doing is creating a greater dependence on that resource that is subsidizing the industry that you say is diversifying the economy. We're considering one contract today, and I've read it over, and I don't think it has all that many technical defects. It's the contracts that we haven't been able to see or examine are the ones that bother me. In other words, I think the state has to make a commitment, probably of its royalty oil, to get a facility of this kind. But should it make a commitment of this nature without having any other kind of commitments from the marketing people, from the purchasers of the product? And that's what's bothered me the most. One of the speakers talked about we don't want to ship our resources to Japan, but you'll notice there was a lot of discussion about the Alpecto project procuring a commitment from Japanese markets to make this thing fly. And of course they didn't do that. And I think if you're talking about a world scale petrochemical, you're talking about selling to the nations that need the petrochemical. And they haven't been willing to commit. There is no legal commitment. Yet the state is willing to make that commitment. And when I use the state, I'm talking about the people of Alaska, because it is their resource. And I think we're entitled to see a little bit of commitment in terms of a contract from other markets rather than just a commitment on the state of Alaska's part. I've examined this contract, and I think that waiting 6 months or whatever it takes to get more negotiations going, and there will be other negotiations. The argument that this is going to kill for all time petrochemical plants in the state is silly, because I think the offers will be forthcoming. What it might do is to generate some support on the market end when the market situation is clear, so we see some commitments on the people that are ultimately going to make this work, and that's the consumers that use this. Without those commitments, this contract doesn't mean much.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, I think it'd be useful to explore a little bit more the point Mr. Chatterton raised. And that's that once this project is completed, it's a relatively capital-intensive project, and there are going to be very few permanent jobs. There's going to be a large number of jobs resulting from construction of the project. But once it's online, there are going to be really very few jobs there to operate the facility. So what I think we're talking about is a subsidy of millions and millions of dollars a year just to support a few hundred jobs. And what's the alternative? According to Mr. Dankworth, it's just additional money for the state treasury. But what we're talking about here is royalty oil. And a portion of that is dedicated to the permanent fund, a portion of that is dedicated to the renewable resources fund, funds that whose sole purpose for existence is to provide jobs in other sectors of the economy. So what we're really doing is diverting money away from businesses that can stand on their own in the free enterprise system with a loan from the permanent fund or a loan from the renewable resources fund. And we're using that money to prop up what everybody agrees is an economically unfeasible project. I just don't think it's a trade we ought to be making.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A lot of ifs have found their way into our debate, I think. if Alpetco can't build a viable petrochemical complex, then Alpetco presumably would come to the state and ask us to lower the price of the crude. Well, if there's an iffiness extant anywhere, the iffiness resides in this legislature. Let me explain. Alpetco is largely leveraging this thing, and they have to go to the money market and get a lot of bucks. So they're going to go up to some money guy and say, hey, we've got this project that probably can't really make it. We want a couple hundred million dollars to finance it, build this big plant. We feel really safe about this because if the old pro forma doesn't show we can make it, we're going to go to the Royalty Oil Board, and we're going to talk to them about selling it to us for less. We're going to talk to the Department of Natural Resources about selling it to us for less. And then we're going to go to those 60 people in the legislature, and we're going to convince them they should sell it for us, sell it to us for less. Well, that's the iffiness. If Alpetco is really putting its project together based on an assumption that at some future date it's going to be subsidized through a lower price on our royalty crude, that's too big an if to deal with on this floor. It's subject to the vagaries of this body, the future administration, departments, so many ifs that you can't pin anything on it. Again, this is Alpetco's project. They say they can make it, and I submit that we should let them try.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, you know, this is an election year, and a lot of people get phone calls and telegrams and all that sort of thing, but we're sitting here with an awful lot of reports and information. I don't know how many people that have contacted me have ever even seen the contract, except for reading about it in the newspapers. But in spite of the fact that no doubt if the contract is disapproved, and right now I don't think anybody here knows for sure where the votes are, if the contract is disapproved, no doubt there'll be all kinds of hawing and screaming by those who, in their self-interest, have something else in mind or another reason, saying that it happened because the state of Alaska is against petrochemical development. Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true at all. I think the whole reason for the action of the committee is that they're in favor of responsible petrochemical development. There's another issue that has not been mentioned, and that is that if Alpetco now or later comes in with a viable project, we have a community of interest. We may be helping them even in the event that there is a vote no, because then they could come back with a better contract, and they're now in a position to be talking to quite a few people. They have a lot of people in the financial community that have a stake in this thing now, at least prospectively. They may be able to come in with something that is much more economically sound for them and for us. Now, Mr. Speaker, in spite of the fact that it's an even-numbered year, I will have no problem at all if the governor calls us into special session 4, 6, or 8 months from now, even if he's running and I'm running and half the people in this room are running, because it is that important an issue. If we're to look at another contract, I'd like to see another contract. I'd like to see this project go. I'd like to see it go in a way that's responsible both for the interests of the state and the companies involved.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, if I could summarize my thoughts on this. This is a contract with an organization that's largely on paper, dealing with resources that in large measure have not even been discovered yet, to a market that doesn't even exist. You put that together, Mr. Speaker, and that spells turkey.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Dankworth brought up the subject. That's a tremendously, tremendously important subject of jobs. We have a very high unemployment rate. We all know that. But two points have to really be raised on the subject of jobs. First, that
in this facility, the permanent jobs that are going to existing Alaskans are not going to be more than 50 to 60%. Now, this isn't something I'm making up. This is something that the state's own Division of Economic Enterprise says. So half of the jobs will go to outsiders, half will go to Alaskans, and that's in one of the reports by David Ram, who works for the Department of Economic Enterprise. The second question that we have to ask, insofar as the jobs go, and realizing they are tremendously important, we look at the numbers and say, what price glory, I suspect, is it worth $200 million in 1984? It's a direct loss to the general fund because of this. Is it worth a direct loss in 1995 of $75 million, or in the year 2000 of $48 million? Now, I suspect these figures can be argued, but certainly nobody's refuted them. We've checked them twice, and that's the cost. We all have to have. We all want to support jobs. We all have to have jobs, but. Number one, how many are going to Alaskans, and what is the price? They're two important questions.
Representative Nakak.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have basically a few thoughts I'd like to bring into this discussion, and some are statements and some are designed basically to perhaps create some questions in people's minds. Number one, the governor's no-growth image basically will not be vindicated by the administration's negotiation of this contract of royalty oil to the Alaska Petrochemical Company at the expense of the rest of all Alaskans. A major selling point, or more correctly, a lobbying point, is the participation of six Native corporations in this venture. And a question I have is, when the state has to give Alpetco essential support, in common language, that's lower prices for the crude, what happens to the royalty dollars going into the ANF, the Alaska Native Fund, and its impact on the 7I monies? I've alluded in past statements on the floor and to individuals the importance of D2 legislation, Congress, UDAL, etc., and everybody else. But people don't seem to be aware that the Claims Act was a whole book. The Claims Act, in it, had the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The Claims Act has D2 lands. The Claims Act has D1 lands. The Claims Act has 12A lands, 12B lands, 12C lands. And what are these? Well, one of these components is called 7I, 7I monies. What happens to those dollars that basically come from the state's royalty, the $500 million worth of royalty money going into the Alaska Native Fund from the state, and that's the 7I section. Where will those dollars be when the state has to support this by cutting the price? Well, I'll tell you where they'll be. They won't be there. Up to now, what has the state put into the Alaska Native Fund? Or finally, along that particular line, the assumption that six corporations having 51% of 40% of this consortia is more sacred than the trust placed in me by my constituents and the rest of the state is a wrong assumption. The statement that in the eyes of the United States business community, that these eyes are on us and focusing on our approval or else is basically pure and unadulterated crap. The fact that this is a lousy contract will impress them, perhaps not positively. Finally, I have problems with this contract, and my obligation here on this resolution, HCR 112, is simply to vote for or against it. With my conscience and my finger, I have no choice but to push the button that is red. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, may be at ease.
House, please stand at ease. Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to comment on something that was Mr. Dankwist said a while ago. I guess we're all aware of the need for jobs, and I think that certainly in my area of the state is one that's, we've had 19% unemployment rates recently, and so I guess I'm aware of that problem too. But Mr. Dankwist said, all we're interested in is the bucks. Mr. Speaker, we had a bill introduced a couple of days ago here by the Resources Committee, in fact, by Mr. Osterbach, yes, for $193 million for rural schools. I had a resolution written this morning asking the Department of Health and Social Services to develop a comprehensive plan to do something about otitis media, which is affecting an awful lot of our school kids out in the bush, not only being a health problem, but forcing them to have a great deal of difficulty when they go to school because they can't hear very well. Mr. Speaker, we have a lot of needs like this around the state. And how do you pay for those needs? You pay for them with those very bucks that Mr. Dankwist was talking about. There's no other way. The fact that if this plant gets going, and Mr. Dankwist likes to subsidize it because it means jobs, sure, that's where's it going to mean those jobs? In one certain area of the state, and Mr. Speaker, I submit to you, not in that area of the state where the most of those state bucks are going to be needed. Most of those state bucks will be needed out in the rural areas. And if Mr. Dankwist thinks it's a good trade to subsidize pretty expensively a few jobs in one area of the state at the expense of those dollars which we could use in the areas that really need the help, that's his privilege, of course. I don't think that this is one of those times you can take a sort of a general philosophical approach and say this is the one you're going to use in this particular case. I think that the thing we have to do is to look at this in a much broader viewpoint. The money is simply not going to be there unless we get those dollars, and the needs are there.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, in reply to Representative Parr, we're not speaking of any subsidy at this point. All we're telling Alpetco is that we are going to give them a guarantee of our royalty share of crude and let them go out, talk to the world financiers, look at the market and see if they can put the project together. If in 18 months they can't, the project's over, the state hasn't lost any money, we haven't committed a thing. That's all we're saying. We're not speaking of any subsidy.
Representative Dankwist.
Mr. Speaker, in answer to Mr. Parr's statement, maybe I should further translate what I said if I left the impression. I said what I did say was that we should view our resources as being able to be translated into three things. One is money, one is jobs, and one is money and jobs. That's how it'll come down. And this contract speaks, we get our money and our jobs. I would never propose that we don't get any money for our resources, even though I don't see any point, as I said, in some of our resources if we have to take a little less to encourage the jobs and the building in this state, that may be one way of distributing this wealth that the state says belongs to them. The state, so far, has been doing nothing but building bigger bureaucracies for the most part. Certainly we have to have schools. And that petrochemical plant and these other things will be paying taxes, and they'll help building schools. But as all of us have agreed, if all we take is money and build a bureaucracy, someday somebody, is after that resource is run out, is going to have to find a way to build those schools and keep them going, because everybody's sitting around on welfare, unemployment. That's the point I wanted to make. That, and I agree with Mr. Parr. If that was the only thing that I said, that we shouldn't, that we should not worry about jobs, I do worry about jobs. I think that the point I wanted to make, and if I haven't made it already, is that we can have our jobs and we can still have our money. A Petco has not offered us and asked for 1 cent less than we'll get it if we let it go down to the States. Not 1 cent less. We're getting the same amount for our resource. And that's the beauty of it. We're also picking up thousands of jobs in this state. And all they're asking is for a chance to go out there and see, as Mr. Kelly said, if they can put it together. And I think that that's a fair proposition if we ever want to talk about development in this state and keeping our resources within the state. So I hope I didn't leave the impression with Mr. Parr that all I said is that we should turn it all into nothing but jobs and no reason, no money. We need money, but we can have them both.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I believe the representative from Eagle River put it very succinctly. All we're doing is giving these people a contract to go out and find money and find a market. I think he has summarized it for this body very simply. The only unfortunate thing or where I disagree is it's not a contract. I prefer the language that the consultant to this body gave us. It's a franchise to promote.
For further discussion, ready for the question. Question is, shall House Concurrent Resolution number 112 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Schaefer? Any other member? Clerk, please take the roll.
Yeas, 17 nays, 2 excused.
And so House Concurrent Resolution number 112 has passed the House. Brings us to the end of today's calendar and down to unfinished business. Is there unfinished business to come before the House? Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on HCR 112.
Clerk, please note Representative Bradley's notice of reconsideration of his vote on House Concurrent Resolution number 112. Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent that Representative Meekins be excused from the call of the House on Friday the 5th.
Hearing no objection, motion is adopted. Member will be excused on the date indicated. Is there further unfinished business to come before the House? Special orders. Are there any special orders? Announcements, committee meetings. Representative Cooper.
Speaker, the Finance Committee will meet at 2 o'clock, I guess, to take up House Bills 815, 830, and 854. And also after that, we'll be taking up some matters relating to land disposal.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, at 4 p.m. this afternoon, there'll be a South Central meeting in the House State Affairs Committee dealing with the capital move issue. Other members are invited to attend from other parts of the region or other parts of the state if they care.
Representative Rudd.
Community and Regional Affairs will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock on HCR 125, approving the standards and guidelines for the Coastal Management Program.
Further announcements? Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, House will meet at 3 this afternoon. We have House Bill 950 on student loans, House Bill 945, issuance of teacher certificates, House Bill 934, sick leave for certificated employees of school districts, and House Bill 714, bonds for vocational education facilities.
Representative Osterbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resource will meet today at 1:30 p.m. taking up House Bill 960, Management of Game, or Fish and Game. House Bill 674, Reorganization of the Board of Fish and Game.
Representative Gardner.
Judiciary will meet at 3 o'clock today on House Bill 921, Establishing Office of Administrative Adjudication. House Bill 664, Practice of Optometry. House Bill 837, Interpreters for Handicapped Persons. There will not be a meeting at 7 o'clock tonight, so that members may play in the basketball game against the lobbyists at 7:30. Might beat them on this one.
Representative McKinnon.
Commerce will meet tomorrow morning at 8 to take up House Bill 827, Small Business Surety Corporation. House Bill 937, Lifeline Electrical Service to Residential Consumers. And Senate Bill 326, Malpractice Insurance.
Representative Parr.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry, I forgot to announce we will also take up HCR 128 on otitis media.
Further announcements. Representative Urien.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Carpenter be excused from a call of the House from the 5th through the 8th of this month.
Hearing no objection, the motion is adopted. The member will be excused on the dates indicated. Are there further announcements? Is there further business to come before the House? Representative Miller.
Yeah, reminding members again of the basketball team that Representative Gardner mentioned, which will be at 7:30 p.m. at the J.D. Gym. If anybody has any questions, they can see Senator Holman. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent with this body stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House is adjourned.